Thank you very much, and welcome to the first day of the Iowa State Fair. Let me begin with a recommendation. Pork chop on a stick. Trust me, it's what's for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snack. And I've already been down there. I want to say thanks to the Des Moines Register for giving us the opportunity to have this forum, and thank all of you for coming and taking a minute out away from some fried foods and rides just to hear a politician talk. But I think a lot of times you in Iowa, you hear a lot of politicians talk. You hear a lot of people come to your state. This time, 17 Republicans are coming to Iowa to ask for your vote and support in the caucuses. There'll be a handful of Democrats who will come as well. Hillary probably is not going to come. She'll email in her appearances. You see, I know the Clintons pretty well. I was born in Hope, Arkansas, the same town Bill Clinton was born in. People wonder sometimes, how in the world is it possible that so many politicians would come from one small town? The answer is, I don't know. But here's what I do know. That for the Republicans who are deciding how to vote, who to vote for, a lot of the questions are, is there anybody on our side that has a good opportunity to take on the Clinton political machine? Folks, I'm the only one who's ever done it, because every election I ever ran in Arkansas, every time, I didn't just run against an opponent. I ran against the entire political apparatus that the Clintons had built over a 25-year period. And I'm going to tell you something, it's formidable. I know most of you probably think that the most Democratic state in the country is Massachusetts. Maybe you think it's Oregon or Vermont or Maine or New York or New Jersey, but you would be wrong. Because in the 1990s, the most Democratic state in all of America was Arkansas. And when I was elected lieutenant governor, I was only the fourth Republican elected in 150 years. When I was elected lieutenant governor, I got to the state capitol, and they were so happy to see me, being the only Republican in the state capitol, that my door was nailed shut from the inside. Literally nailed shut. And by the way, it stayed that way for my first 59 days as the elected lieutenant governor of the state. That was my introduction to the hardball politics that the Clinton political machine knows how to play. Every time I was ever on the ballot, both Bill and Hillary Clinton came and campaigned for my opponent. I've never been bitter about it. It made me a better candidate, because here's the fact. I not only took them on, but I repeatedly beat them. And I live to tell about it. That's why I'm here today. You'll hear from the other side that they've done such a great job running the country and that the economy is in recovery. But everywhere I go across this country and right here in Iowa, I don't talk to people who say, yeah, the economy is recovering. Because I talk to people whose economy is not recovering. Last night I was at a pizza ranch. Of course I was. I was at a pizza ranch in Waukee, and a guy comes up to me. He's a contractor, owns a small business. He does landscaping. And I'd been talking about a guy that I'd met in South Carolina 3 weeks ago, a guy named Mark. And the guy in South Carolina named Mark, I met at the Fairfield Inn in Aiken, South Carolina at 6 o'clock in the morning. My team stays at the Fairfield Inn because it's a cheap hotel, and they got free internet and free breakfast. We spend your campaign money like you wish the federal government spent your tax money. We try to be frugal. So I'm down there at 6 o'clock in the morning for breakfast, and Mark is working the shift there for the Fairfield Inn, and he strikes up a conversation. We get to talking. Mark is a college-educated accountant, and 3 years ago, he was working as an accountant for a manufacturing company there in Aiken, South Carolina, when the company closed down and shipped all 300 jobs of that company to Mexico. 300 factory workers and front office people, of which he was one, all lost their jobs. Now Mark is working three part-time jobs, and with three part-time jobs, he doesn't make as much money as he used to make on the one job he once had in the factory. Mark's story is the story of 5 million Americans who have lost jobs in manufacturing since the year 2000. 60,000 manufacturing plants have closed in this country since the year 2000. And last night when I was talking to the landscape contractor in Waukee, he was saying that he could relate to Mark's story that I had told. He said, because that's mine. He says, I'm working 100 hours a week. Folks, that's a lot of work. And there are a lot of Americans who are sweating through their clothes every day. They're lifting heavy things. And they're not getting a lot to show for it. It used to be that if you would just get through high school, get a good job, and work hard, you could take good care of your family. You could move up in the middle class. Lord knows I was able to do that because of a hard-working dad who worked 2 full-time jobs, but with 2 full-time jobs could barely pay the rent on the little orange brick rent house that I lived in on 2nd Street in Hope, Arkansas. Guys, I'm not blue blood. My family did not come over on the Mayflower. My family's blue collar. We got dumped off the shores of Georgia after being dumped out of the debtors' prisons in Great Britain. My ancestry is not something that is all that noble. My dad always told me, he said, son, don't look very far up your family tree. There's some stuff up there you don't need to see. But let me tell you why I love this country. Because if a kid like me can grow up like I did, with parents who never had the opportunities of a great education. My father never finished high school. His father didn't. I'm the first male in my entire family lineage that ever graduated high school, much less went to college. If a kid like me can become the governor of a state and can aspire to be the 45th president of the United States, this is an amazing place to live. And I'm grateful to God to be in this country. But I've got a few years on me now, 3 grown children and 5 grandchildren. When people say, why are you running for president? Well, sometimes I ask myself that. But I can tell you why. Because I want those 5 grandkids of mine to have the same kind of hopes, opportunities. I want them to be as optimistic about their country as I grew up being. And I want them to believe that America is the greatest nation on earth. And I want them to believe that that's true because it is true. And we have to fight for it to be true again. I'm not willing for us to be a second-rate nation. I want us to have the best military, the best economy, and the best standard of right and wrong morality that any country has ever had in the history of civilization. And that's why I'm running for president, because I want those grandkids of mine to love America and to have a great America to love. But if we're going to make this country great, we've got to make some big changes, not little things, not twist the screwdriver, tap the hammer. We have to make some truly major changes, like get the fair tax passed and quit punishing people for their work, and once and for all, get rid of the criminal enterprise known as the Internal Revenue Service. Let's be rid of them. Let's get our military where it's strong again, where nobody wants to fight with it. The bully in your school when you were a kid, and I hope it wasn't you, but the bully in your school only picked on the kids he thought he could beat. He never picked on a kid that was so tough that he knew that would put the bully on his rear end. And if we want to keep America from having to go into a war, it may sound counterintuitive, but the best way to do it is to have the most robust, well-trained, well-equipped, best ever military in the history of the world that nobody on this globe wants to ever pick a fight with. But let me be also very clear when people say, what is the most important issue that faces this country? And some people ask, do you think the most important issue is the economy or is it national security? It's like asking me, which wing of the airplane is most important? The one on the left or the one on the right? When I fly on a plane, I kind of like for both wings to be on there. It just flies better. Of course we have to get our economy going. People need to work. And we can't work when government regulation and taxation and litigation creates job migration and folks are getting the jobs in China, Mexico, Japan, South Korea, and Indonesia, but not in the United States of America. I don't care whether they have jobs there, but I sure as heck care that people in this country have good jobs that pay good wages, lets them feed their families, and move ahead to the next rung on the ladder. We've got to make that a focus. You bet we do. And national security can't be separated from that. I'll secure the border within the first year, because we've got to do something about letting our country become an open door where we no longer control our border. Now, if you think it's presumptuous on my part to say we can secure the border in a year, I'm going to tell you that it can be done. 73 years ago, we built a road between British Columbia and Alaska, a 1,700-mile road, and we built it in less than a year. That was with the engineering capabilities of 73 years ago and doing the construction in the Arctic winters of the North. Of course we can secure the border, but you have to have a president that says, I'll do it, and I'll make sure it gets done, and I will be a president that will get it done. That's a commitment to this country. But even if we have both wings of the airplane, I also believe you've got to have a steering mechanism. Otherwise, without a steering mechanism, two wings will just simply fly it to the crash site. And the steering mechanism for this country has to be a strong moral fiber that comes from what our founders said in the Declaration of Independence: we're in adherence to the laws of nature and to the laws of nature's God. Let us never apologize for who we are as a country that cannot be explained apart from the providence of God Himself. There is no other explanation for the United States of America other than His providence and intervention. And if we are going to invoke His blessing, as we often do, and it doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or Republican running for president, here's something we always say at the end of our speeches: God bless you, and God bless America. Every Democrat says it, every Republican says it, but folks, I'm not sure how we fully expect to invoke God's blessing on this country if we continue the slaughter of unborn children in their mothers' wombs, 60 million of whom have passed away since 1973. Let's start acting like a civilized people rather than barbarians. Let's stop the slaughter. And when I hear people say, well, we'll defund Planned Parenthood, wonderful, that's terrific, we should do it. But let's do more than that. Let's not just end funding for this nightmare. Let's end the nightmare and make it so that when we ask God to bless us, He can look down from heaven and say, I will. I thank you very much, and I'm going to take a few questions for the remaining time that I've got, which I probably will regret. This is called Q&A. That means questions and answers in your world, but for me, it's questions and avoidance. You ask questions, I will try not to do anything that will end my presidential aspirations here today at the soapbox. You, sir, front row. Easy one. How would you specifically get our economy back to 4 or 5% growth? Question: how do we get the economy back to 4 or 5% growth rate? I believe we can get it to 6 or higher with the fair tax. I'm convinced. Here's why: $11 trillion of capital is parked offshore. I guarantee you we will goose the economy if you bring $11 trillion of working capital back to this country. When you stop punishing people for working and saving and investing and quit rewarding people for making mistakes, which is the way we are operating now, we will transform the economy. We will bring manufacturing jobs back to the country, because under the fair tax, we aren't going to be at the competitive disadvantage to make things. Folks, it's not enough for us to have an idea and design and create it something. We have to make the things that we create. And right now, we are designing things, we're creating things, but we're making them in China. Now, what we need to be doing is making them here, but we can't, because there's 22% embedded tax on everything we make here. That's not in what's being made in China, so it comes back cheaper than what we make. The fair tax changes that and gives us the competitive edge. So we bring those manufacturing jobs back, and we stop the crazy regulatory environment. I've got a contractor friend, and he has a great little plaque on the back of his hard hat. You guys are going to love this. Here's what it says, and it's true: it ought to be at least as hard to get welfare as it is to get a building permit. Do you agree with that? Okay. Yes, sir.
President, would you fully fund
The question is, would we continue to fund things like the Global Fund? I've been to Rwanda. I've seen the benefit of the mosquito nets that we provide for about $7. It saved thousands of lives. I think there are many humanitarian things we can do. We can't fix every problem in the world. We can't be the world's policeman. We can't be the world's medical corps. We've got to get our own house in order. Our own children and grandchildren will never be able to have the strong and great America that can do great things across the world. So that's got to be job one. It doesn't mean we won't care, won't involve, but the number one goal for the next president is to make it so that people in this country will have the kind of money that they can contribute to those $7 mosquito nets that save those children who are right now dying of malaria unnecessarily. Now, let me just pass this on. I think sometimes we fail to understand that our involvement in the world needs to be from a position of strength, not weakness. And the one thing I'm committed to is that America will no longer be a nation that asks permission to speak or act. We will act in America's best interest, in American workers' best interest. We will make this country strong and make it so that wages in this country are worth something again, something that hasn't happened in 40 years when the bottom 90% of the economy has had stagnant wages. That has to change. Okay, yes, ma'am, back over here at the poll.
Yes.
Question is, she says, I'm a real champion for arts education, and I am. As governor, I was one of the only governors in America that ever led my state to mandate art and education for K through 12 with certified teachers. Look, one in every three high school kids in America drop out of school. You know why? You think they're dumb? They're not. They're bored. The reason that a lot of kids are bored is because they're right brain dominant students, which means they are creative in their nature. They're the ones, by the way, who create things like your iPhone. But the problem is, if you put them in a traditional classroom and say, sit down, be still, put your feet in front of you, look forward, listen to a teacher talk for 45 minutes, you lose them because they're thinking and dreaming out all over the place. Put music and art and dance and theater and a paintbrush in their hands and you will change their lives and you will change the outcome of those kids. So let me be very clear. I am passionate that every student in America should have access not to either or, but to music and an art education. Should that be a federal requirement? No. Your state should do it, because I am convinced that one of the biggest messes we've created in education, instead of letting moms and dads and local school boards and states run their education, we've let Washington run it. And Washington has no idea what's best for students in Iowa, but you ought to make sure that in Iowa you don't let any kid go without an art and music exposure and education, K through 12, with certified teachers. Yes, sir, in the hat. What does that hat say? Case? Question is, will I support ethanol and renewable fuels? The answer is yes. And some people say, well, that's not a very conservative position. Folks, let me tell you what's not a conservative position. A conservative position says if the government tells people to do something and spend millions and millions of dollars in infrastructure to follow a new government mandate and they do it, and then the same government comes back and pulls the rug out from under them and says, well, we're not going to do that anymore. You've just messed up a whole lot of people who made the investment because they trusted their government. The reason that we can't just pull the rug out from under the renewable fuels is because it was the government that asked American farmers to engage in this process. Now, if you go back and change the rules after the guys have gotten in the middle of the game, you're going to disrupt another big piece of the economy. And this is one of the reasons that I'm running for president. It's time for somebody to understand that when America makes a promise, it ought to keep it. It ought to keep its promise, not just to farmers and people in the renewable fuels industry, but here's some. It ought to keep its promises to the veterans who kept their promises to this country and fought to give our freedom and now want to make people wait 3 months, 3 weeks to get the care that was promised to them. And we ought to keep the promises to people on Social Security and Medicare. You're looking at one Republican who will tell you straight up, I have no intention of going in and saying we're going to raise the age at which you retire, take your benefits away from you. Because, folks, that is your money. It does not belong to Congress. It belongs to you. You didn't have a choice about whether it came out of your check. And as a result, there's no way the government who has taken that money from you ought to be able to somehow not care what happens to you. My time is up. I want to thank you for yours. I hope you have a great time at the Iowa State Fair. Final word, I need your vote in February at the caucuses, and I don't care how cold it is that night. Please go vote for me. And if for some crazy reason you are not going to vote for me in the caucuses, for God's sake, stay home that night where it's warm and do not leave your home. Thank you, folks.